This is a WILL primary election special. Tonight, a forum with the candidates running for the Republican nomination for governor of the state of Illinois. Your moderator is John Paul.
Good evening and welcome to Election 2006. I'm John Paul. Tonight, your chance to meet the Republicans who want to be governor in Illinois ahead of the March 21st primary election. Tonight, we have four of the five Republican candidates with us, and we are live from the studios of WILL-TV on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. But we're being seen tonight on several PBS stations throughout the state of Illinois. Let's meet our candidates tonight. First, State Senator Bill Brady from Bloomington. Also with us tonight, Chicago businessman Ron Gidwitz. Businessman Jim Oberweis is here from Aurora. And lawyer Andy Martin from Chicago. Welcome to each of you. Another Republican candidate, State Treasurer Judy Barr Topinka, withdrew her participation in this televised program about 1 week ago. Her campaign media advisor says she is in Chicago tonight at an event with the new president of Poland. By the way, the Democrats running for governor are Rod Blagojevich and Edwin Eisendrath. Joining me to question the candidates, two veteran Illinois political reporters who regularly cover issues at the state capitol, from Carbondale's WSIU-TV, Jack Tichner, and from Chicago, from the Chicago Tribune, Rick Pearson. Welcome to them. They'll be asking most of the questions in tonight's forum. And by the way, we are not in timed response debate-style format tonight. We hope to be a bit more conversational and perhaps a bit more relaxed. As moderator, it will be my job to work to keep any one candidate from monopolizing the discussion tonight. And after a random selection, Mr. Gidwitz has been chosen to begin with the first answer tonight to our first question. Mr. Gidwitz, your first question tonight, why should the voters of Illinois select you as the next governor?
That's a terrific question, and one obviously I struggled with long and hard before I decided to declare my candidacy. The state's in very serious trouble. We've got a $65 billion debt. We've got the largest unfunded pension obligation in the country. Our education system isn't doing what it needs to do to educate our young people so that they're ready for the world of work when the time comes. We have a variety of problems. The jobs that we heard our president talk about a couple of weeks ago in his State of the Union message are not coming to Illinois. We've got 23,000 jobs as opposed to the 250,000 we should have had. I've had a fair amount of experience in job creation, in education as the former chairman of the State Board of Education. I run a large private company, and I have the kinds of experiences I believe necessary to run a very large enterprise such as the state of Illinois. And I've got the independence to do so. I haven't been part of the culture of corruption that we keep reading about in the newspapers. Unfortunately, all too often, politicians who have been in office for a period of time seem to have gotten engaged in this kind of a problem, and that we need to separate ourselves from it.
Mr. Oberweis, why should the Illinoisans watching tonight select you as the next governor?
Well, I'm very pleased to be here with Bill and Ron and Andy. I believe that any one of the Republican candidates would be a great improvement over what we have most recently elected as our governor. Having said that, I think we're all aware there is an incredible culture of corruption in politics in this state. There have been four former governors during my lifetime who have either served time or been indicted. This is absolute craziness for a state like Illinois in the heartland of America, and it must change. And I've pledged that as governor of Illinois, I will not accept campaign contributions from companies doing business with the state of Illinois. And I believe that's what's necessary to break the flow of cash that has been moving from companies to politicians and then back again to companies with lucrative state contracts. And to end that, I believe that we need an outside influence. Just like Peter Fitzgerald brought in Patrick Fitzgerald as our U.S. District Attorney from outside of Illinois, from outside of any connections, from New York, I believe, in that case. And Patrick has been one of the best things that has happened to Illinois in terms of rooting out corruption at every level. I believe that we also need somebody to come in as an outside influence to Springfield to root out the corruption that has been so prevalent in Springfield. I will be that person. I have no ties with any prior administration.
Mr. Martin, why should the people of Illinois elect you?
There are two reasons. All of my worthy opponents recognize a culture of corruption. but they're all babes in the wood when it comes to fighting it. As a young law student at the University of Illinois, right on this campus, I began fighting corruption 40 years ago. When I moved to Chicago, I began fighting the entrenched Democratic Daily Machine and brought down the Bright & Krug Company, one of the biggest contracting companies that had done bid rigging on the runways at O'Hare. I helped start the level of anti-corruption in the U.S. Attorney's Office in fighting Operation Greylord, crooked judges and court personnel in the Cook County Courthouse. I helped put crime syndicate hoodlums in jail. So when you talk about the problem, we all agree what the problem is, but of the five candidates, I'm the only experienced one. So why would you choose a rookie corruption fighter when you've got a professional that everybody recognizes has done real harm and real damage to organized corruption in this state? The second problem is that we have a primary that is going by default to a totally incompetent and manifestly unqualified candidate, Judy Topinka, and she is wrong for the Republican Party, and she's wrong for Illinois, and with all due respect to my opponents, however successful they've been in business, they haven't been successful as candidates. And although the Chicago Tribune and I have had our differences, they have said that I'm a great campaigner. You need to have a strong campaigner to go against the governor. I am that candidate.
Mr. Brady, why should the people of Illinois vote for you?
Well, Illinois clearly is looking for a new generation of leadership with a real commitment. I've got a proven track record, 12 years in the Illinois General Assembly, a consistent track record in business as well, 25 years building a family business. Illinois needs a governor who knows that jobs are our highest priority and a governor who knows how to create jobs. Over the last 25 years, that's what I've done throughout central Illinois, from Bourbonnais to Bloomington, Champaign, Peoria. I also have the 12 years in the legislature. I know how to get the job done. I know how to work with the legislature to accomplish what Illinois needs to accomplish. As I've laid out in my six-point plan, which you can see on my website, Brady for Governor 2006, making Illinois the number one job climate, ending the culture of corruption, reforming our school system so more dollars go into the classroom, reducing property taxes, sales taxes on gasoline, and repealing the tax and fee increases of Rod Blagojevich, balancing our budget, and instilling those basic family values that I've worked hard for in the last 12 years in the Illinois General Assembly. We need a governor who will lead that agenda. I've got the ability to do that.
Thank you. Jack Tischner, your first question.
Last time we had a race for governor in Illinois, Rod Blagojevich and Jim Ryan both pledged not to raise general taxes. But if you follow through on a tax pledge like that, you find yourself with a pretty limited toolbox when you actually get in the executive office. Wouldn't it be better or at least more honest to just say, I'm not in favor of higher taxes, but I'm not going to make up my mind until I actually get into the office and have a better read on things, rather than to tie your hands right out of the box?
Mr. Oberweiss.
Jack, no, it wouldn't be. In fact, our other candidate who's not here, Judy, calls tax pledges phony baloney. I believe that somebody who is not willing to make that pledge to the voters of Illinois, in fact, intends in the back of their mind to go ahead with a tax increase. We don't need a tax increase in Illinois. We need someone committed to controlling spending. We don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem that is out of control. This legislature has been spending like a drunken sailor, and the governor has been pouring gasoline on the fire. We have to end that, and I've pledged that we'll do exactly that. And we've come up with several significant dollar savings programs that we can put into place to bring that budget back into balance and to make sure that we don't have to increase taxes. Increasing taxes is just going to make the situation in Illinois that much worse, driving companies out of the Illinois and driving people who would like to live here away from Illinois. We have a fairly high tax structure already today. Adding to that would make it that much worse. We need to make sure that we keep opportunities and jobs in Illinois.
Mr. Martin.
Well, Ronald Reagan, the Gipper, our beloved former president, used to say, the government is not the solution, government is the problem. And taxes is a way that government is fed. And we need to starve the beast. We need to starve the beast because there's too much waste today. At O'Hare Airport, when they put the competitive bidding out for cleaning of the toilets, the price dropped by 18%. So clearly, in the case of the Daily Machine, there was an 18% corruption tax. I think there's a lot more wasted money than even my opponents realize. And if you want to create jobs and create an economic climate, having a governor who's really committed to holding the line on spending and does it starting in the governor's office, where I would prune the staff, really sends the right message to the rest of the country that Illinois is open for business and doesn't have the open palm for corruption.
Mr. Brady?
Over the last 12 years, I've proven myself as a tax fighter, and I will do that as governor. And I think it's important the people of Illinois know what they can expect from their governor. I have pledged not to increase sales or income taxes. In fact, I've pledged to reduce the tax burden on Illinois families, senior citizens, and businesses. We have got to realize that taxing stifles economic activity. Reducing taxes and holding the line on sales and income taxes will build a stronger Illinois economy and provide more revenues. This isn't about taxing just to not tax. It's about dropping taxes so that we can raise more revenues through job creation and have the resources we need to reduce property tax burdens and to fund our pensions and our institutions of higher education.
Mr. Gidwitz.
It's a terribly important question, what we do with taxes. I led the fight in 1992 to fight against the constitutional amendment to increase taxes. In 1997, I fought against the tax increases that were proposed by then-Governor Edgar. And more recently, I chaired the Illinois Coalition for Jobs, Growth, and Prosperity, where we fought against Governor Blagojevich's effort to increase fees and taxes on people who create jobs here in this state in 2004. And we beat him, and we actually rolled back some of the fee and tax increases he put through in 2003. We cannot afford to increase the cost of doing business in this state. We are 10% more expensive a place to do business here in Illinois than Wisconsin is, and 25% more expensive than Iowa. If we want to begin the process of bringing jobs back to Illinois, we have to figure out a way to get the costs down, not raise the taxes.
Sounds like we need Judy here to argue in favor of a tax increase.
Mr. Pearson, your question.
Gentlemen, thank you for being here this evening. Next week, the governor delivers his budget, and I'd like you to put yourself in these shoes as he looks at what the state faces. Demands for the FY07 budget year. We're going to have $700 million in new revenue growth. We have to spend $400 million to make a pension payment, despite the pension skipping that we're doing. Education wants $400 million. Healthcare, Medicaid costs are estimated to be up about $500 million. Employee group health insurance, another $100 million. That doesn't quite add up. What would you do about those specific programs and those demands?
Mr. Martin, you're first.
Well, the Chicago Tribune on February 7th had an editorial, The Blob That Ate Illinois, in which it indicated that we were $40 billion overcommitted in our pension funds. Ladies and gentlemen of this state, Mr. Blagojevich and his predecessors in both parties, it's a fault of both Republicans and Democrats, have bankrupted this state. And it's time for a governor that will do in Illinois what Governor Reagan did in California, just take out the machete and start slashing away and stop the waste, do something to get the books balanced. It's a disgrace.
Mr. Martin, just to follow up to that, what would you do with these current proposals that are out there?
I have one word for anybody that wants more money from the state government. N-O, no. Not only no new taxes, but no new spending. The first step is you freeze spending, and then you go through everything and you chop. We are bankrupt. $40 billion in debt means that as a law student, of course I studied insolvency, we're insolvent. We can't pay our debts. We've promised to pay more than we have in resources.
Mr. Brady.
Well, we not only have to hold the line on taxes, we have to reduce taxes so we have greater economic growth and greater natural resource growth. Ricky, you talk about 750. I think it could go higher, as high as 900 this year, 900 million. But if we repeal the sales tax on gasoline, which I'm promoting, and we repeal the 300 tax and fee increases, which the governor has not really been able to use because they're unconstitutionally swept, I believe we can bring jobs back to Illinois. We've lost over 250,000 jobs because of the policies of Rod Blagojevich. Those 250,000 jobs would bring over $1 billion in revenue, in addition to the natural revenue growth you speak of. And we do have to cut, but the best area where we can make provisions is also an area which would help, and that is Medicaid. Our Medicaid system is bankrupt. It doesn't work to the benefit of the patients, and we need to reform it. I believe by reforming Medicaid, by instituting what business does, what we do in state government for our employees, by implementing managed care, we could save near $1 billion. That's over $3 billion that helps us meet our pension obligation, hold the line on other spending areas and balance our budget.
Mr. Gidwitz.
I think the proposals that Bill is suggesting are terrific, but they don't solve Rick's problem for next year. It will not help us balance next year's budget. We need to change the way we budget, in my opinion. Unfortunately, what we do is we take the prior year's budget, we take a look at what the revenue growth is going to be, which in this case is somewhere between $700 and $900 million. We try and figure out a few programs that we might be able to cut, and then the legislature spends the spring appropriating that increment of money. What we really ought to do is do what's done in the private sector, which is to go back to a clean sheet of paper called zero-based budgeting and establish priorities based on a plan that we agree on ought to be followed. What are the most important things to Illinois? How are we going to build Illinois into the future? What's going to make Illinois great 5 years from now or 10 years from now? And then fund those items as a priority. On my list, education is number one. Number two, we've got to take care of the health care system. We also need to find a way to bring more jobs to Illinois, because if we can't bring more jobs over a period of time, we're never going to be able to afford the costs of government, because the costs of government are rising too fast for the current base of job providers to and taxpayers to support.
Mr. Oberweis.
I think there are three major directions or prongs. Number one, if we do what I suggested, and that is I will take a pledge that I will not accept campaign contributions from companies doing business with the state of Illinois. By doing that, I believe we can end this culture of corruption and we can make sure that we operate in a more effective way. I believe that we can bring down our costs on that budget, of the entire budget, by 2 to 3% by ending the corruption tax that we all pay now in higher costs due to those contracts going to typically friends and contributors to the campaign. The second, and that's about $1 billion right there. Secondly, if we end project labor agreements, or PLAs in the state, which limit competition for our construction bids, whether it's roads or schools, I believe that we can save at least 12 to 18% on those contracts. That amounts to hundreds of millions of dollars every year. And this is the same thing, by the way, that President Bush did for our country when he became president. He ended the agreement that the federal government would follow project labor agreements, which kept out bidders. They tend to make it more difficult for smaller companies to bid. They tend to make it more difficult for female companies, for minority companies. We need to open that up. The more competition we can get, the better off we're going to be, the better value we're going to be. And as governor, it's my objective to get the best value for our taxpayer dollars. The third thing, I think, is in agreement to what Bill was saying. As we do these types of things and we bring the cost down for business, we can expand the economy in Illinois once again and bring more jobs to Illinois, which helps to increase our revenues. I don't believe that we have a revenue problem. I believe we have a spending problem. If we control spending, the revenues will continue to increase on a natural basis.
Thank you. Jack Tischner next.
Budgeting is kind of a two-step process in Illinois. You've got the operational side of the budget. You've also got the capital side of the budget. And Illinois has done without a capital budget for the last 3 years now. Dozens of school districts need buildings replaced. Their roads need to be built. Mass transit systems need money. The governor, of course, as you all know, a few weeks ago pitched a $3.2 billion capital plan to the General Assembly. And ostensibly next week, he's going to tell us how he intends to pay for that. What size of a capital budget for the state of Illinois would you recommend if you take office? And then how would you intend to pay for it?
Mr. Brady.
Well, there's true that capital's very important to the state budget process. We have infrastructure that needs improvement. We have buildings that need to be built. We have schools that need to build buildings. This governor, though, can't be trusted. The first step in passing a capital program is to have a governor that can be trusted, not just by the citizens, but by the legislature. I have a business working relationship with the members of the General Assembly. I believe I can pass a capital bill that they will trust, one that is spread equally throughout the state of Illinois to the benefit of public safety, of economic development. The size of that budget should be limited. We don't need $3.2 billion today. Every year we retire about $500 million in debt that has been used for previous capital projects. That frees up about $30 million in revenue that should be used to be reinvested in capital projects that would provide somewhere between $300 and $400 million
available. Is that the only revenue stream you'd have?
That's what we need today, and that's all we can afford today. That's what we should use to provide for the infrastructural needs of our state, as well as preserving the road fund. This administration has stolen $1.7 billion from the road fund over 3 years. That's put our infrastructure at risk. That's put our highways in a situation that public safety is not being taken care of. We need to preserve the road fund, an incremental capital program with existing revenues, and then we need to maximize the federal transportation bill.
Mr. Gidwitz.
Clearly, we have a problem with our capital budget. When I was chairman of the State Board of Education, I lobbied the state legislature on four successive years for the $8 to $9 billion worth of infrastructure needs that our schools require across the state. As a business person, having run a Fortune 500 company for nigh on 20 years, I understand why we need to have high-quality roads, well-maintained roads. Unfortunately, the state today cannot afford to borrow any more money. We don't have a source of revenue to support those bonds today. The governor has basically stolen the money out of the road fund that was intended both for maintenance and for capital budget. And unfortunately, the revenue streams aren't there. I would, in good conscience, would not propose that we have a capital budget until we can identify specific sources of revenue, which I don't see today.
Mr. Oberweis.
You know what? It's pretty clear to me that Ron and I are businessmen, not politicians. A politician will go out and say, oh, yes, we'll do this, and not have the justification for that. In fact, a businessman looks at it and says, how can we economically do this? How can we finance it? Are the dollars there? In this case, the dollars aren't there. The number one goal must be to get to a balanced budget right away, and then look at what we have left over and how we're going to spend that. Certainly, when we get to the point that we've got our budget balanced, I believe that higher education and infrastructure developments, such as new roads, should have the top priority. They're two of the most important things.
So you'd leave the federal transportation money sitting on the table that we would not get?
Clearly, we want to do whatever we can to make sure that the funds that have already been approved, that we provide matching funds for those. And yes, that would be something that we would commit to do, absolutely. It's hard enough to get those matching funds available. Speaker Hastert worked very hard to make those funds available for Illinois. They are there, and we want to take advantage of that. But first has got to come a balanced budget. Secondly, we've got to stop taking money from earmarked funds, such as the motor fuel tax, where this governor has taken hundreds of millions of dollars every year. Those funds could be the matching funds right there.
Mr. Martin.
Well, I would say what I wouldn't do first, and I would not bring back more gambling or more funny business to fund a capital program. I led successfully the battle to block the governor's proposal for Keno, and I will continue to be a watchdog against more gambling and more corruption and more types of activities that degrade the state. Very simply, we need to take a radical approach, and I think the governor has to do is, again, what President Reagan did when he was governor of California, and say, the cupboard is empty. We have to share the sacrifice. There will be no capital budget except that which would forfeit federal matching funds, et cetera. And we're just going to have to all tighten our budgets and get the place done. You see, until we restore confidence in state government by ending the corruption, people aren't going to trust us with more money. And that's the problem. Everybody is cynical today, and so you have to vote for a corruption fighter, because I'm the only one that can fight the corruption and bang them over the head, and then people will say, well, we trust Governor Martin. We'll trust him with our money.
All right. Rick Pearson.
Gentlemen, in the final year of the next governor's four-year term, the state's obligation to the public pension systems of Illinois will be $3.6 billion for that year alone. Where is that money going to come from? And as some of you had said throughout the campaign about this important need that the state catch up in its underfunded pension system funding, where are we going to get the money to pay just that year's obligation, as well as try to catch up to what retirees and current state employees are entitled to receive?
Mr. Gidwitz, your response.
It's a terribly important question, and again, it comes back to we need to go and take a look at how we budget our money. But that's, quite frankly, not enough, because we're not going to save ourselves into prosperity. We're not going to save ourselves to a point where we can afford to just put the money into the pension funds. 3 years hence, we ought to have somewhere in the area of $2.7 billion to $3 billion more dollars coming into the state than we currently have. Some of that money clearly could be used for that very purpose. That's just a natural growth in the revenue. But the other issue the other point that I made earlier we need to consider, which is we need to broaden the tax base in the sense of we need to broaden the number of taxpayers that we have. I proposed some time ago a program to encourage people, Illinois companies, to grow their businesses, the centerpiece of which is called the Jobs Now Tax Credit, which offers a tax credit for new employees and a bonus if those jobs for those new employees have benefits associated with them, such as health care and retirement, and a variety of other programs. Cut back on some of the tax increases and the fee increases that Blagojevich put through in the year 2003. We can encourage the job base to grow if we take some steps now, and we ought to be able to therefore pay for the pension increases and hopefully some of the other increases that we're faced with.
Mr. Oberweis?
Rick, I've talked already a little bit about the three main prongs of raising significant revenues for the state. Number one, ending the corruption tax, which I believe can produce an additional $1 billion. Number two, ending the executive order of this governor requiring project labor agreements, which cost us hundreds of millions every year. And three, stimulating job growth, thereby increasing the revenues of the state through more people working, through greater corporate profits. But beyond that, we have to address the serious situation with the pension system itself. Clearly, those people, and there are three categories, those people have already retired. We have that obligation. We must meet those commitments, and we must fund that pension to make sure it becomes fully funded. Secondly, new hires, I believe, should be hired not under our current pension system, but rather under a defined contribution plan where the state will be required to make ongoing contributions on an ongoing basis. People will have their own account. They'll be able to take that with them if they leave the employee of the state or if something happens to them, they have those assets. Very much like our own 401k plans or IRAs that most people are familiar with. And most companies are moving and have been moving for the last decade away from defined benefit plans into defined contribution plans. The main question left then is the current employees, and I would try to structure a plan that would be attractive enough that on a voluntary basis, those employees would vote and would like to move into our defined contribution plan.
Mr. Martin?
We need a radical solution to the problem of public employee pensions. Auto workers are losing their pensions. Airline employees at United Airlines have had to face reduced pensions. And all of this is not Mr. Oberweis's fault or my fault or Mr. Gidwitz or Mr. Brady. It is the prior administration. It is important to point out that Judy Topinka wants to increase the deficit, wants to hire more people, and wants to create more waste. I favor going to the bankruptcy court, the federal bankruptcy court, under Chapter 9, which is a state and municipal bankruptcy, and asking the bankruptcy court to help us figure out what we're going to do. And I think we'll probably have to tell everybody that if you're going to ask the school children to suffer, and you're going to ask the Medicaid people to suffer, and you're going to ask everybody else to suffer, why shouldn't the pensioners kick in their share of it, too? We need to cut the debt. We need to cut the $40 billion unfunded liability that the Tribune talked about, and we need to do that by getting court help. We can do that. I would do that.
Mr. Brady.
Well, I don't think we need court help. I think we need a governor who will lead the charge. First, we have to stop the bleeding, and that is by moving state employees to a defined contribution program, a 401k system like I have in my business. Secondly, we need to restructure the debt. The state does have debt of $38.5 billion in unfunded liability in our pension system, and we've got to restructure that in such a way that the legislature can't, or a governor can't, refuse to fund it. This governor reached in and stole $1 billion from our pensions, putting the retirees at risk and future retirees at risk and the taxpayers of Illinois at risk. We need a governor who will lead the cause, who will stop the bleeding through a 401k system, who will restructure the debt so the legislature is forced to pay it. And then how do we come up with the money to pay it? That's why it's so important today to retool Illinois' economy, to repeal the 300 tax and fee increases that have been imposed by Rod Blagojevich on businesses and families, to repeal the double taxation on motor fuel, the 5% state sales tax, to bring convenience stores and truck stops and other businesses back to this state, to reduce property taxes, to go on to pass meaningful medical malpractice reform and workers' compensation reform so that we can make Illinois' economy the most thriving economy in the nation. The only way to raise the revenues to meet our obligations are to bring jobs to Illinois. That will afford us the opportunity to cut government services and increase revenues.
Jack.
Chicago Mayor Richard Daley is asking the General Assembly to help the city schools in Chicago come up with a $328 million budget shortfall, or actually help them with that this spring. Otherwise, there are going to have to be some deep cuts. I've heard terms of at least 1,000 layoffs in teachers, maybe. What kind of hearing would Mayor Daley get if you're in the governor's office? And more broadly, how would you balance the needs of the city of Chicago against those of the rest of the state?
Mr. Oberweis.
Jack, there certainly are many great things that we could do with funds, but as I said earlier, we have to first get our budget balanced. That must be the number one priority. And people coming asking for hundreds of millions of new dollars, we have to be very cautious and very careful about those things. Having said that, I believe there are great opportunities to use the dollars that we have in education more effectively and more efficiently. We need to focus those dollars on the classroom and reduce the administration and bureaucracy. Chicago is not a model for a high-efficiency education system. We need to provide more school choice, and in particular, we need to move towards merit pay, paying our best and brightest teachers based on how well they teach, not based on how long they teach. And we need to make those fundamental changes that will allow us to provide a better education more effectively at the same dollars or even perhaps less dollars. No profession, no business can operate in an effective manner without some type of merit pay rather than longevity pay.
His question also involved balancing Chicago and downstate.
Please tell me what you mean, what the question was. I missed that part of it. I'm sorry.
If you're a downstater, there's a perception, rightly or wrongly, that when Chicago talks, the legislature and the governor's office listen first at the expense of downstate.
And that's probably a justified concern. This governor in particular has really focused on Chicago. If you look at pensions for Chicago teachers, those have been pretty fully funded, whereas teachers' pension system across the rest of the state have not. I think we need a governor who will represent all of the state, not just Chicago.
Mr. Martin.
I'd tell the mayor what I told everybody else. N-O, no. Take a hike. He runs a corrupt empire. He says he doesn't know what's going on. He says he's not aware of the corruption in the hired truck program or all the other gangsters and hoodlums that he has in the city payroll. And I'd say, put your house in order. The legislature gave you the power to run the schools. And this is the same answer I gave, by the way, at an urban forum a couple of weeks ago in Chicago. Judy Topinka was in there promising everything but the kitchen sink. I said, we can't afford it. They said, what are you going to do for us? I said, nothing. Let the mayor straighten this one out. It's about time we stopped treating Mayor Richie Daley as a moron and an incompetent and started treating him like an adult who has to have some responsibility for the job that he holds. And I would tell him, stop crying. The sharing, there's going to be a shared sacrifice in this state. You're going to share it. Downstate's going to share it. And it's going to be an even Steven share. No more Mr. Daley snaps his fingers and all these little munchkins in the legislature jump.
Mr. Brady.
Well, there's no question all schools are struggling, but everyone's going to have to tighten their belt. I've served in the Illinois General Assembly and served as a legislator who has said no to programs we can't afford, and that's what kind of governor we need today. We have got to say no to programs and balance our budget, and the rest of the school systems and others are going to have to work within their means to make that happen. I'm the only downstate candidate in this race, Republican or Democrat. There's no question that Rod Blagojevich has attacked downstate to the benefit of the city of Chicago. He has given almost full funding to Chicago pension, teachers' pensions, while underfunding our pensions. As a downstater, I understand how to balance that interest. Let's face it, all the leadership in Springfield comes from, I shouldn't say Springfield, but comes from the city of Chicago. Downstate is a balance of interest in this state. Now, Chicago, I believe, is the greatest city in the world. But Illinois is bigger than Chicago. We need a governor who understands the downstate interest. As the only downstate candidate, Republican or Democrat, I can provide that balance of power, that balance of leadership.
Mr. Gidwitz.
I mean, the problems that Chicago public school systems have is no different than the public school systems all across the state. As the former chairman of the State Board of Education, I saw report after report after report of school districts, almost 201, that were suffering from some sort of financial problem. We have a legislature who claims that, and a governor who claims that, education is their number one priority. But unfortunately, when particularly the governor, begins to deal with the issues, it just becomes one more special interest. What we need to do is, in fact, make schools the number one priority, make the youngsters of our state the number one priority, and make sure that the funding that they need for those schools is adequately provided. And I believe that can be done. But we're going to have to make some difficult choices. We're going to have to choose between education and some other things. But if we don't support our schools and we don't support these youngsters, our future is going to be very dismal.
Let me take the discretion of the moderator here and ask a question before I jump back to Rick Pearson here. You're all here in suits tonight. You're all here in ties. To the audience, you look like men in dark suits and ties. Tell me what distinguishes you as a person. Who is it that you would like to be, that you claim that you idolize, that you would say that that you hold yourself up to or you look up to for public life? Would that be another politician? Is it someone else in life that you say, that's who I want to be like? Tell us who voters think you are a mirror of. Mr. Martin, you're first.
Well, 40 years ago on this campus, I was a young, idealistic law student. And then I went to Springfield and saw a cesspool of corruption. And I have fought corruption in this state and in other states at a considerable personal cost. But I have lived a moral life committed to the public interest and not my own private interest. I'm not a wealthy businessman, and I don't have a wealthy lifestyle. So I would be just the person that I was when I started out. I haven't changed. I'm still
committed.
Would
you model it after someone that the audience can
identify? I think Ronald Reagan would be my goal. Ronald Reagan was a great man for two reasons. One, he knew how to set policies. He knew how to understand the goals. Secondly, he could simplify these programs so that the public could understand them. And finally, he knew how to say no. And all of my opponents are good men, but they've never been able to say no. I said no to the culture of corruption as a law student, and I'm still saying it.
Mr. Brady, who do you model your life after?
Well, first of all, I'm a Roman Catholic, and I grew up modeling my life after asking myself the question, what would Jesus do? And that truly is the way I feel. But in politics, I just read a book about Abraham Lincoln called Team of Rivals. And Abraham Lincoln did a great job after the convention in Chicago of bringing the Republican Party together, bringing all of his opponents together to unify the party and move our country forward through the most difficult time. I believe, with my experience in the Illinois General Assembly, and I believe my experience as a legislator, I can exemplify Lincoln in bringing the legislature together and the state together to move us in the direction we need. A lot of people argue about partisan differences. 90% of what we need to accomplish can be accomplished across party lines with the right leadership.
Mr. Gidwitz, who do you model yourself after?
I've been particularly fascinated with Teddy Roosevelt, a great Republican from the beginning of the last century. Here is, quite frankly, more or less a Renaissance man. He was a terrific soldier. He was a great leader. He was a wonderful outdoorsman. And he had just a variety of interests that made him a terribly interesting person and a great leader. He's a person that I'd love to have the opportunity to emulate.
Mr. Oberweis.
You know, the automatic easy answer is, of course, Ronald Reagan, probably the greatest politician, the greatest leader during my lifetime. And he brought in people to solve the needs of the country, brought in experts in different areas and didn't try to do everything himself. But, you know, as I sat here thinking about it, I would mention another name, and that is Patrick Fitzgerald, our U.S. District Attorney, that Peter Fitzgerald brought in to help clean up corruption in Illinois. And I believe I've already indicated he would be one of the people that I would like to model myself after. I would like to do the same thing in Springfield to clean up that corruption as an outsider.
Rick Pearson.
I'm shocked no Elvis.
That's the governor.
Elvis will be here.
That's the governor. That's good. Right.
How do you sell a Republican message and, moreover, a conservative message in a state that has trended increasingly blue, and when perhaps the conservative movement's most articulate messenger got 27% of the vote last time?
Mr. Brady.
That's a good question. It goes back to how I answered the previous question. I think you have to be firm in your foundation, your principle. People know they can trust me. I haven't wavered over the last 12 years from principle and conviction. I have a consistent track record in the Illinois General Assembly. And then you go out and you build coalitions on areas that we need to accomplish. That's how we do it in the Republican Party. That's how I've done it in this primary. Building coalitions of Republicans who know we need to move toward defeating Rod Blagojevich and wanting to support a candidate like me who can get that job done. That message is a message that people will buy as long as you're consistent and as long as you've been committed with a track record. And I've sold that message. We need to move on to sell that message in the general election. Because to win this election, we're going to need a candidate who can bring every Republican vote come November and bring Reagan Democrats. I believe I'm best positioned to bring the most Reagan Democrats over in this election.
Mr. Gitwitz.
Rick, I think the problem that we have in this state, frankly, is not attached for this election to party labels. I think the problems that people are suffering from and are concerned about are universal. They're worried about jobs. They're worried about the education of their youngsters. They're worried about getting quality health care for themselves and their families. And they're worried about this culture of corruption that permeates the fabric of our politics. I'm independent. I'm not a politician. I've never run for public office before. I come from the private sector. I ran a company called Helene Curtis, built it into a large business. I believe I come to this job with the stature and the independence to be able to give people the confidence that I'm the right person to take this state
but
forward.
But the Republican Party itself has had credibility problems, and credibility problems on issue of culture of corruption. How does that message get articulated that you as a Republican candidate can satisfy people's concerns?
Well, I think it's a real concern. That's why I say, as an independent, I come from outside of, from an independent from the politics of the past and the present, to be perfectly frank. I come from the private sector. I haven't had to ask people for money for myself and my candidacy in the past because I haven't run for public office before. I think people are worried about this particular issue. People clearly would like to see a change, a fresh face. I believe I represent that fresh face. And I have had the experience and the credibility to run organizations fairly and effectively that respond to the needs of the people.
Mr. Oberweis?
Rick, during the last 28 years, we have had all Republican governors in Illinois with one exception, and that is a guy who got in because voters were punishing Republicans based on what they allowed to happen during the Ryan administration. But I also will question your premise there. If we look back at the great conservative, as you referred to the scenario, I believe that was Ronald Reagan who carried Illinois very strongly, as have our other governor candidates. Certainly, Peter Fitzgerald, another conservative, carried Illinois quite strongly. I believe that we're looking at one short period in time that was greatly affected by the negative things that happened in the Ryan administration. So I don't accept your premise that this is suddenly a massively blue state. I believe there are great opportunities, and Mr. Blagojevich, in my opinion, has done everything wrong from the Democrat standpoint, and given whoever the Republican nominee is, a great opportunity to be the next governor of Illinois.
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Pearson, let's talk candidly. The Republican Party has a problem, and that's the right wing. It forces my very decent opponents to take extreme positions. Senator Brady said he opposes abortion even in cases of rape and incest. I guess that means he favors custody rights for rapists. Mr. Oberweis was quoted in the Daily Herald as saying he wants to bring back physical violence in the schools. That's a thing that corporal punishment and domestic violence are a major problem. They're beholden to the right wing. The Democrats are beholden to the left wing. And we need to have a governor who is truly an independent and who is truly conservative. And conservative means stopping the promises to both sides. Ms. Topinka is the world-class promiser in this race. None of us, not any of the four candidates here, can match her in the way she passes out promises to special interest groups. I would be somebody that would say no. And secondly, I do think that Ronald Reagan did lead the way. He's not the easy choice, he's the hard choice, but he brought California back from the brink, and this is what I would do to Illinois.
All right, Jack Tischer.
I'm going to ask a two-part question, but you still get the same amount of time to answer it. A couple of social policy issues. Illinois is divided around a lot of political fault lines, and gun control is one of those political fault lines that people think about differently if you're in the city of Chicago and the suburbs and the rest of downstate Illinois. The governor has talked about an assault weapons ban this spring. Knowing how he feels about that, how would you stand on that issue? And also, is it time to lift the moratorium on the death penalty in the state?
Mr. Gitwitz.
Let me answer both of them. It's pretty easy. I happen to believe that assault weapons ought to be outlawed. Unfortunately, legislation that was run last year in the legislature was too broad. My suspicion is that the legislation that the governor is talking about is a mirror image of that and I would not be in favor of it. A tightly written, very specific ban on assault weapons as opposed to sporting guns, I would support. With respect to the moratorium, were I persuaded that the reforms that were put in place or whatever reforms were necessary to make sure that no innocent people were put to death, I would then lift the moratorium.
Mr. Upperweis?
I don't support bringing back the assault weapons ban. And, you know, I've spent the last 2 years trying to get a good definition of what assault weapons are. Certainly the name sounds like something we ought to want to ban. You know, it conjures up images of machine guns or bazookas or something of that nature, which all of us would agree shouldn't be possessed by most people. But those are already banned, so that's not what it's all about. And I'd like to know exactly what we mean by assault weapons in this particular case, and I've never been able to get a good definition. On the death penalty, I do in fact think that the death penalty can act as a deterrent. I believe that the reforms that are being put into place, in addition to the fact that the DNA evidence is certainly more accurate today, significantly reduces the likelihood or possibility of an innocent person being convicted. For that reason, and to the degree that the death penalty does serve as a deterrent, I would support an end to the moratorium.
Mr. Martin.
Well, here you see a perfect example of what I gave in my last answer. You have a left-wing hot-button issue, guns, and you have a right-wing hot-button issue, the death penalty. Unequivocally, I will seek the abolition of the death penalty. The death penalty is barbaric. It is a disgrace to this state. Going back to John Peter Altgeld, the great governor of Illinois, who was named after Altgeld Hall here on the campus, I favor abolition. I think it's disgraceful that the right wing keeps on demanding blood. It's something out of a Roman circus. So the answer is no death penalty. Let's have harsh problems and let's have harsh penalties. As far as the gun issue, let's put the criminals in jail so the law-abiding sportsmen can have firearms, and let's have people allowed to have home weapons, and let's have a concealed carry permit. I favor the Second Amendment. I'd be a strong supporter of that.
Mr. Brady.
What's barbaric is the criminals who are convicted of the death penalty. I believe in the death penalty. I don't believe a moratorium's legal. One of the most difficult decisions I'll have as governor of this state is whether or not to stay in execution. As governor of this state, I'll make sure that we have the utmost laws in place that prevent us from putting innocent people to death. And as governor of this state, I will investigate every case to make sure that we didn't make a mistake. As far as the Second Amendment, I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I believe that our focus ought to be on putting criminals behind bars. Legislation I had the privilege to vote for said 15, 20, and life. What that said is if you're a criminal and you use a weapon, first offense, 15 years. Second offense, 20 years. Third offense, we're going to throw away the keys. That's where our emphasis ought to be, locking up criminals who use guns illegally.
Rick.
4 years ago in the Republican primary, it kind of revealed where the fault lines fell in the party. And in fact, it left a very wounded nominee. I have a very simple question for you. If you don't win, are you going to support the winner of the primary?
Mr. Obereis.
The answer is yes. However, I think the degree of enthusiasm for support for a candidate will depend on who that candidate is. There are some of the candidates here tonight that I could very, very, very enthusiastically support. I think would make a great governor. There are some other candidates who are not here tonight that I would support, but it would be with a little less enthusiasm.
Mr. Martin.
The problem that we're facing in this primary is the so-called front runner is dodging and running. Judy Topinka is afraid to face her opponents. We've had two forums now here in Champaign-Urbana in the last 2 weeks, and she's been hiding. And she thinks she is the presumptive nominee, and it creates a problem. But I think that we could probably agree as a group that we need to come together after the primary. I have taken a pledge to support the winner of the primary, and I would then do what I could, whoever that winner was, to be sure. I don't think it's going to be Topinka. I think in the next 5 weeks that her balloon is going to deflate, because as I go after her on her phony record, she's not going to be the nominee, but I will support the winner of the primary. I believe in democracy.
Senator Brady.
I absolutely, unequivocally, will support whoever wins the primary. I serve in the Illinois General Assembly, and I can't handle another 4 years of Rod Blagojevich. Anyone's better than Rod. I operate a family business. The state of Illinois can't handle another 4 years of his destructive policies. But to Treasurer Topinka, it's true. She's playing hide and seek. She's hiding while the voters are seeking to find out the truth of her positions. And she should be here tonight. I apologize that she's not. But regardless of who wins this primary, my goal is to defeat Rod Blagojevich. I believe I'll be the nominee. I believe I'll be able to do that. And I will support, though, whoever wins this primary.
And Mr. Gitwitz.
It's clear, I think, to all of us that any of the Republican candidates would be preferable to Rod Blagojevich. I, too, expect to win the nomination. But in the event that I don't, I will work actively, campaign actively, for any of these gentlemen who may, in fact, be successful.
Okay. Jack.
Great Chicago Business says the state of Illinois could capture as much as $15 billion in new revenue by privatizing the state's tollway system. We don't have many tollways in downstate Illinois, but there are a lot of them around the Chicago area, very busy. The city of Chicago has done this with the Chicago Skyway. What about the state of Illinois? Is that something we ought to give a lot of you guys are entrepreneurs. Can private business do it better and turn a profit for the state of Illinois?
Mr. Martin, you're first.
Well, you know, my opponents all brag about their business success, and they're all very successful businessmen. But state government is different. A businessman can fire employees, cut payrolls, abolish things. You can't abolish the Illinois Supreme Court. You can't downsize the legislature. You can't fire a legislator whose vote you disagree with. So it's not so easy to make radical changes in government when you talk about the structure of government. The tollway has been a cesspool of corruption. It's been a Blagojevich patronage pool. I favor removing the tolls. There's a more important issue, sir.
What about paying off the bond service on it?
That ought to be a function of the state, because we have a problem in North Illinois, Northern Illinois, and that's congestion and pollution. And we can't meet our pollution goals and our congestion goals by having all these extended tollways. I think we need to go for a free tollway. That was what the voters were promised when the tollway bonds were originally passed 50 years ago. Once again, politicians lied to the people. It's time to stop lying, and it's time to take a more broadly based view. The tollway toll should be lifted, not expanded.
Mr. Brady.
I'm open to anything that works to the best interest of the taxpayers and public safety. Indiana has sold some of their toll roads. The mayor of the city of Chicago sold toll roads, provided infusion of cash. What I don't want to do is sell the toll roads for short-term infusion of cash that ends up costing public safety and the taxpayers in the long run. I'll look at anything that works well for government. I'm not sure that's the solution, but I'm not sure it's not.
Mr. Gitwitz?
I think it's very true that once upon a time, and it is clearly a story as opposed to now a fact, that the people who were sold the toll roads as a means of financing roads were sold a bill of goods. The tolls, once the bonds were paid off, were supposed to be lifted, and they were supposed to become free expressways. And unfortunately, over the years, that hasn't happened. With respect to selling the toll roads now, I'm totally opposed to it. And what bothers me about selling the toll roads is the money that will be generated, and it will be a significant amount of money, will be put to general use for the good purposes of the entire state. But unfortunately, the people that would be paying those tolls will be very localized, the people that use that specific piece of road. And so we've got relatively few people in the state of Illinois that are financing the state as a whole, and I think that's inequitable. And in fact, when you look at what's going on in Indiana, now that they've decided to sell some of the toll roads, the local people that make good use of those toll roads are incensed, because they know the tolls are going to go up to pay for the increased cost of financing the sale. And the greater population of the state of Indiana is going to be getting the benefit of it, and it's not fair.
Mr. Oberweis.
Look, I want to keep an open mind and be willing to look at all possibilities, but certainly my first reaction, the idea of selling off our tollways and making those private so that somebody can raise rates and charge whatever they like to use those tollways, is to me not the right solution. And what will unfortunately happen, just like when we tried to sell the Thompson Center to balance our budget, we're selling off our capital assets. We're selling off our infrastructure and then using that money to be spent on a daily basis and totally consumed. That is not good for the state. That hurts the state and hurts taxpayers over a period of time. It would lead the state into ultimate bankruptcy, in my opinion.
We are winding down to the last few minutes of this conversation tonight. One more question I ask all of the candidates to keep their answers extremely brief as we get down here to the very end. Rick, one last question tonight.
All of you have talked about waste, fraud, and corruption like it's a line item somewhere in the budget. Can you tell me one specific program, given the spiraling costs in health care, one specific program you would cut or eliminate in the Department of Human Services?
Mr. Brady.
One specific program in the Department of Human Services that I would cut or... Well, as you know, I voted against All Kids. Sounds popular.
It's not there. I'm talking about the current budget. Well, okay.
You're right. It takes effect closer to the election, so he can campaign on it. In the Human Service program, I would cut Medicaid spending by better managing our care, providing a managed care system like business throughout the state. I believe we can save over $1 billion and provide a higher quality of care for Medicaid recipients.
Mr. Gidwitz.
I agree with Senator Brady to the extent that I would look at the Medicaid program. The legislature had a study done about a year and a half ago called the Lewin Report, which identified $400 to $500 million worth of savings several years out once it's implemented, providing you put in managed care. Unfortunately, it wouldn't be available for next year.
Mr. Oberweis.
Clearly, the Medicaid, as everybody is talking about, is the large pool of money where we can really make a significant difference. Moving to managed care is something that should be done right away. It's an important, significant savings, and it's a no-brainer. Now, this governor wants to go spend that money already on a new program, the All Kids program. I think we ought to do it without spending the money.
Mr. Martin.
There's no doubt that there is waste in Medicaid, but I would also insist that the budget not be balanced on the backs of the poor. So I don't think there's any easy thing. I would favor, as opposed to eliminating a program, an across-the-board cut. Mr. Oberweis talked about a 2% cut. I believe we have to have a governor that goes to the people and says, we're going to need shared sacrifice. So my solution is not a meat axe, it's shared sacrifice.
Let me ask for, as we wind down to the very last minute here, just one phrase. The top item on your to-do list the day after you are inaugurated as governor, top item on your desk. Ron Gidwitz.
Campaign spending reform. Implement the program that I put forward, and you can find it on my website. It's a 7-point program, and I believe it's the number one thing that's going to put some confidence back in state government.
Mr. Oberweis, top thing.
Absolutely ending political corruption in Illinois.
No doubt.
No doubt.
Mr. Martin.
Shared sacrifice. I mean, I certainly am identified with fighting corruption, but I think the people have to have a governor that is going to have compassion for the poor, who is going to maintain the social contract, and so shared sacrifice is my message.
Senator Brady, top thing on your desk.
You mean after my wife Nancy and I move into the mansion? Cutting taxes. 300 tax fee increases imposed by Governor Blagojevich, cutting property taxes, cutting the tax on motor fuel.
Sorry, but that is it, gentlemen. Thank you for your time tonight, and that wraps up our discussion tonight. We thank the candidates for allowing us to visit with them tonight and get a chance to meet them, and our thanks to our reporters tonight, Rick Pearson and Jack Tishner. We especially thank you for joining us tonight, and remember, there is an election not too far away, March 21st, the Illinois primary election. Be sure to get out there and vote, whether you're voting Democrat or voting Republican. Have a good night and a great weekend.
You've been listening to a simulcast of WILL-TV's Election 2006 Republican Gubernatorial Forum. In future weeks, WILL-TV and AM 580 will bring you Election 2006, a Democratic Gubernatorial Forum. And a reminder that next Wednesday at noon, AM 580 will bring you Governor Rod Blagojevich's budget address to the state of Illinois. AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853.
The Undiscovered Explorer, Imagining York. I'm Danny Glover. This is the story of a man named York. It is also the story of how history is remembered, recorded, and imagined.
A large, fine man, black as a bear.
You know, York was so black, they tried to rub it off his skin. Then they realized that this was the original man.
Saturday afternoon at 5 here on WILL Urbana. This is listener-supported WILL. Our February membership campaign is underway. We're here today to ensure that the programs you enjoy are here tomorrow. That's the goal of our campaign. You can help keep WILL strong with your pledge to 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL. Call us now and join the friends of WILL. And thank you. Ed Kieser's forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Tonight, cloudy with some flurries, the low 24 degrees. Winds northwesterly at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with occasional snow showers and flurries, the high around 30. Winds northerly at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night,